Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Drs. Foss and Chagpar welcome Dr. Srikant Main. Dr. Main is Senior Research Scientist in Genetics, Senior Deputy Director of the MBB Keck Biotech Services, and Director of the Microarray Resource at the Yale School of Medicine. Here's Francine Foss.
You have a lot of titles, and you're responsible for a huge operation here at the medical school. Can you tell us exactly what this center is?
So, Yale Center for Genome Analysis, as the name indicates, is the centralized facility for the Yale University where researchers can carry out their high-throughput genomic experiments. So, basically, state-of-the-art technologies such as microarray technology and next-generation sequencing platforms are actually being utilized at the Yale Center for Genome Analysis. And to identify the genes which are responsible for various diseases, including cancer, and also carrying out basic biological work.
So this cuts across a lot of different diseases. This isn't just cancer. This is pretty much every disease that we study at the medical school.
You are right.
So it sounds like this is really high-tech kind of science fiction type stuff that you're doing. Tell us a bit more about what exactly is genomics, and how is it being used in practical purposes in daily medicine, or is it?
Yeah, as the name indicates, genomics means study of genes, or study of the genome. As we all know that each of us, or every cell in our body, gets one copy of the genome from the mother and one copy from the father. So the human being is actually made up of both genetics and the environment. It's the interaction between these two which makes us what we are today. And obviously, even though genes make every individual predisposed to a particular disease because of mutations or changes in the genome, the environment also plays a very important role. So the beauty of the study of genes is it allows you to find out what are the changes in the genome that causes a particular disease. And particularly for cancer, as we all know, cancer is mainly the disorder of the genes, or the genes actually there are mutations or rearrangements in the genome which actually leads to the cancer. So from the cancer point of view, the study of the genome is utmost important. And this is reflected here. We are actually working on several cancers here at Yale. But going beyond cancer, we are also studying autism. We are also studying abnormal development of the brain. So we are taking, we are part of the Mendelian Genome Centers, where we are trying to identify the genes associated with the Mendelian disorders. And it is significantly easier to identify the genes associated with the Mendelian disorders because these type of disorders, like cystic fibrosis, they are usually controlled by one gene. But in case of cancer or hypertension or diabetes, there are many genes involved in that. So the task to identify the genes associated with disorder, it's more complex.
So Srikant, there are genes that you're born with that could predispose you to cancer, and then there are genes that become mutated throughout life, and both of those can end up causing disease.
Yes.
And we know in cancer that both of those can lead to cancer, but in non-cancer settings, are most of these diseases related to mutations that a person inherits, or are most of them secondary events that happen later?
Yeah, in case of cancer, I think the situation is most of the genes which are actually caused cancer are somatically mutated. That means they are mutated, they are not inherited. Almost certain about that, you know. So what happens is that as the person, in case of colon cancer, for example, the chances of developing colon cancer are really high in people who are elderly. there is an accumulation of genetic defects throughout the lifetime, and that's reflected in that. But in case of some of the inherited diseases, just like I said, Mendelian disorders, they are mostly inherited because you see those diseases in children.
So tell me a little bit more about how genomics works. Is it that you take a blood sample from somebody and you look at their DNA and their genes and you see which ones are mutated? Or is it that you take a sample of a cancer and you see what went wrong in the DNA of that cancer that caused it to become a cancer?
No, this is a very, very good question, you know. So if the disease is inherited, I mean, that you can see that the disease is in the family, then you know that this disease is particularly transmitted from generation to the next generation. In that case, you can take any part of the body and you will be able to find that defect. Most easy thing to do is just take the blood because it's easier to collect. And you will be able to study the blood and then determine what's wrong with that particular gene. But in case of cancer, which is a somatic disease, you can't study the blood unless it's a blood cancer. So you have to actually take the tissue of that particular cancer and then study that, because that particular mutation is localized only in cancer and not in the rest of the body.
When we're talking about taking cancer tissue, how much tissue do you need to do these kinds of analyses?
Well, I think we don't need lot more DNA. You know, we study DNA, and I think 1 microgram of DNA, so even punch biopsy will do.
So a piece of a tumor that's, say, the size of the head of a pin, would that be adequate?
That may not be adequate, you know, because we need a little bit more than that. And we also like to get the right part of the tumor, not, you know, necrotic part or any part of the tumor which is not cancerous. So we basically mostly do the histopathology to identify the appropriate portion of the tumor, and then we process that.
So Shrikant, tell me a little bit more about what happens then. So somebody has a cancer and you very carefully pick the part of the cancer that is going to be the most informative for you, and you look at the genome of that. So I could think of many different applications for that. It could potentially tell me what kind of drug to treat them with, or potentially help me to develop a new therapy, or it might even tell me about their prognosis. How is genomics being used here at Yale?
I think you are correct. So just identifying the cause of the disease is just the first step. And I think right now we are spending most of our efforts to identify the disease causing genes, because we are at that stage. But there are many people in the country who are also looking at whether a particular drug will actually be helpful for that particular type of tumor. The information which is obtained from sequencing genome or exome, I think, utilized to classify the tumors. And based on that classification or based on that knowledge, one can determine what type of drug will be used, whether the drug will be successful, what will be the prognostic value of this treatment. I think these are the different aspects of genomic technology, the research which is being done. And this is why the genomics is becoming such an important issue, especially for cancer. To begin with, cancer is a disorder of genome or genomics. And on top of that, we have now this state-of-the-art tool which is making huge difference in the cancer research. So currently we are actually, so I also wanted to address some other thing, which other issue you asked me. So many people also like to do the whole genome sequencing. The sequencing whole genome, it's very expensive, very tedious, and not only that, we find the regions which are in intronic regions, changes in the intronic regions, we actually cannot figure out what's the purpose of that or what's the function of that. Also, it costs more money to validate those results.
Sorry, just to interrupt. Intronic regions, that means the non-coding part of the gene?
Right. So I think, but that definition is changing very fast. There is just a paper in current issue of Nature which talks about the intronic region, which used to be thought that it's a junk DNA, but it's reality, it's not junk DNA. So this is an ENCODE project funded by the NIH. I think there is a significant progress made very recently. But most of the proteins in our body are made by only 1% of the genome, and that's called the coding region. Mm-hmm. So at Yale Center for Genome Analysis, what we do is we just somehow isolate this 1% of the coding region and sequence that. And this 1% of the coding region has about 80%, 85% of the disease-causing mutation. So it's very practical. And also whatever discoveries or whatever mutations we discovered, we can make sense of that because it's in the coding region. So that's why I think our focus, even most of the cancer work which is being done at Yale, or Yale Center for Genome Analysis, instead of sequencing the entire genome, we are sequencing only the coding region of the genome.
Can you take us back a little bit to the history of sequencing the genome? So I remember way back when we started sequencing the genome, it took many, many, many millions of dollars and many, many years to actually get the sequence for the human genome.
Right.
So things have changed. Obviously, the technology has changed tremendously since then. Can you bring us up to date in terms of the technology and how quickly we can actually get a genome sequenced?
Right. So You are correct about that. The technology has changed a lot. So the first genome was sequenced in 2002. And the cost of that project, is called Human Genome Project, was approximately $3 billion. And it took more than 10 years for tens of laboratories all over the world to complete this project. So it was a huge project. Obviously, since the DNA sequencing is the gold standard technology to identify the genetic mutation, that technology always was important. But again, the cost was so huge, we couldn't afford to do the research at the whole genome level. However, things changed. I think in 2002 or 2003, Jonathan Rothberg, who is actually the graduate of the Yale University, who started a company called 454 using nanotechnology in Brantford, Connecticut. That technology was the first technology, is called next generation sequencing technology, reduced the cost of human genome from $3 billion to $1 million. And I think since then, Illumina technology came along, and currently the cost of the whole genome sequencing is approximately $3,000,
wow,
and it can be done less than a week.
Wow, that's very impressive.
Yes.
So do you think, Shrikant, can you think of a day when every cancer patient goes in and has a biopsy and you're going to sequence that coding region that accounts for the majority of the mutations and be able to say to that patient, my dear, you have a mutation in gene XYZ. Here is the target that we can give you that will make you cancer-free. Is that where we're going?
Yes, that's where we are going, actually, because as the cost of sequencing is rapidly decreasing, I think the possibility of we doing whole genome sequencing on all cancer patients, it's a realistic goal. And by that time, so right now we are still in the process of identifying the targets or the biomarkers. We still don't know the big picture. The value of doing whole genome sequencing in a routine clinical lab will be actually significantly increased when we know what is the significance of those mutations we see after sequencing. And I think that's the major thing. So right now we are also doing exome sequencing for various cancer patients as well as other disorder as part of the CLIA, as a diagnostic purpose. But then again, we are just looking at only 300 genes because we don't have the information about other genes or the significance of those discoveries right now.
Excellent. Well, that's very exciting. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about genome sequencing with Dr. Shrikant Main.
It's estimated that nearly 200,000 men in the U.S. will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year, and 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Fortunately, major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from the disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using two simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, prostate cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers like the one at Yale to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. The Da Vinci robotic surgical system is an option available for patients at Yale that uses three-dimensional imaging to enable the surgeon to perform a prostatectomy without the need for a large incision. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss, and our guest, Dr. Shrikant Main. We're discussing genome sequencing. So, Shrikant, you know, just before the break, you were telling us about some incredibly exciting advances that are going on in terms of being able to identify genomic mutations and being able to target therapies. Is this what people talk about when they talk about personalized medicine?
Yes, that's exactly part of the personalized medicine.
So tell us a little bit more about that and what are some of the exciting things that are going on here at Yale in that avenue of personalized medicine.
So at Yale, I think we are at Yale Center for Genome Analysis, we are analyzing approximately 1,500 exomes a month. And most of these exomes are actually of the subjects which have different disorders. So some of them have cancer, some of them have hypertension, some of them have other disorders, autism, or any other disorder what scientists at Yale want to study. So we have been extremely successful at Yale Center because we have very high profile discoveries on autism. We also done very basic work in transcriptional landscape of the brain, because that's very important to know what is expressed and what is not expressed and which region of the brain, which genes are expressed. And currently, I think we are working on several type of cancers and colon cancer, lung cancer, and adenomas. Couple of very exciting discoveries we have actually in cancer area is, you know, Dr. Lipton's group has discovered potassium channel mutation, which in aldosterone producing adenomas, which not only increase the hypertension, but also results in uncontrolled cell division. Very recently, Ruth Halaban's paper was published in Nature Genetics on melanoma. This is one of the biggest study carried out in the country. And I think we found several genes, you know, which are implicated in melanomas. I mean, it's amazing to see what UV light or exposure to sun can do, causes, you know, thousands of mutations in people. And especially as the person grows, these mutations keep adding. And one day, actually, that results in cancer. So we found various type of mutations in kinases, tumor suppressors, phosphatases, and also very importantly, the major discovery of this this work was actually to find a mutation in RAC1 gene, which we proved that was responsible for causing melanomas. So as you know that in case of especially cancer, there are basically three type of genes which are affected by cancer or cause cancer. DNA repair genes are the genes which are involved in as called as a tumor suppressors or oncogenes. So basically when one of these genes have a mutation which causes cancer is called, you know, driver mutation. However, there is need to have other type of mutation which just goes along with the driver mutation to cause cancer. So there are several genes are implicated in different type of cancer, and some of them are BRCA1 in breast cancer, KRAS, c-myc, BRAF, EGF receptor. They are all implicated in various different type of cancers like lung cancers, colon cancers. So basically, besides cancer at Yale Genome Center, we are also studying autism or other psychiatric disorders. We are also studying genes which are actually in the subjects where there is abnormality in terms of development of brain and other organ. And we have been pretty successful with that, you know. And currently, we are also using this exome sequencing for diagnostic purpose in a routine clinical thing. So we have actually processed about 200 to 300 samples where we are trying to identify the disease-causing mutation by doing exome sequencing.
So Shrikant, it sounds to me like a lot of the work that you're doing is actually what we call discovery, where you're actually finding out what these genes are, these previously unknown genes are, that are causing some of these disorders. And that's very exciting, obviously.
Yes, that's very exciting. As I mentioned earlier, you know, right now at Yale, at least, we are focusing on just trying to find the cause of the disease, you know. How we are using it for diagnostic purpose, but I think very soon we are going to start developing therapies based on these discoveries and see how it's impact the outcome of the treatment.
So tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that that, for many of our listeners, is really the exciting part, to think about the idea that you could potentially find a therapy that is targeted specifically to your particular cancer. Tell me a little bit more about the collaborations that you have with some of the clinicians and the clinical researchers. Do you think that this kind of work will be incorporated into clinical trials?
Absolutely, you know, and the Gilead project at Yale is the best example of that. So right now, the Gilead project is actually very much focused on trying to identify the causes of various cancers. However, we are also in a collaboration with other clinicians, especially pharmacologists and other clinical scientists, to come up with a drug treatment which will be actually effective against this disorder. And I just wanted to let you know, like in anything else, you know, the first thing is to first identify what is the cause. And once you know the cause, then I think it becomes easier to develop the therapies. And I wanted to give you one example about this melanoma. So the melanoma is actually known to be 50% of the melanoma is basically caused by RAS oncogene mutation as well as BRAF. However, for BRAF gene mutation, the therapies are already known. The inhibitors of this particular product are known, and they are very effective. However, in case of RAS mutations or MYC mutations, I think these therapies don't work very well. So we have now identified RAC1 mutation, you know, and I think it's very, I'm hoping it's very optimistic that we will be able to develop therapeutic drug for this particular target. And I think this is what we have been doing through Gilead project. You know, we are trying to collaborate with clinicians, providing all this information to clinicians so they can look into developing treatment.
And for many of these cancers, if you identify specific pathways that are mutated, I know there are a lot of drug companies out there developing specific targeted therapies for those particular pathways. So it may be that a pathway is activated, say, in a breast cancer and a colon cancer and even maybe in a lymphoma, for instance.
Yes, and I think I should also, you are absolutely correct. We are interacting with other drug companies, but there are many investigators at Yale also very involved in this. But the important thing here, the advantage of genomics is that, so many of the drug therapies which are currently available in the market, they are very broad acting. So there are many side effects. So we are hoping that by selectively targeting only a particular target, we'll be able to reduce the side effects, which are actually caused by generalized treatment, you know. So that is going to be another major advantage of identifying the best suitable targets. And I think genomics will definitely help in that direction.
And it sounds like, you know, if this was really going to become part and parcel of clinical practice, that it's really important that the technology moves in the direction that you were telling us about, where it's becoming more efficient, more effective, more cost-effective to have a place in routine clinical practice.
Yes, you are absolutely correct. And I think I wanted to add a little bit more about that. The technology is changing very fast, and I think National Institute of Health have determined that the cost of the genome sequencing should come down to $1,000 per genome. That's called 1,000 Genome Project. And this is one of the reason I think there are many companies are putting significant efforts in improving the technology. So Ion Proton is another platform, which is actually Jonathan Rothberg from Connecticut has actually developed Ion Proton platform. That platform has potential to bring the cost of the whole genome sequencing significantly down to $1,000 from current $3,000 a genome. But there are also other technologies which are coming up. And one of the technologies I should mention is nanopore technologies. They already have shown feasibility of this technology. And I believe this technology ultimately will bring down the cost of whole genome sequencing to around $200 to $300.
Wow.
And not only that, the time it will take to complete the whole genome sequencing, this is again, is going to happen in future, maybe 3 years, maybe 5 years, but it's definitely going to happen. The whole genome sequencing will be completed within 15 minutes at the cost of $200.
Wow.
So this is definitely going to become a routine test in the clinics, especially for newborn babies.
While you're waiting in the waiting room.
Right. Right.
So tell us a bit more about that last comment that you made in terms of genomics for newborn babies. I mean, does that have ethical implications?
Yes, I was hoping you'll ask me that question, you know. So there are serious challenges, like any knowledge, it has pros and cons, you know. So I think there are, in fact, I'm getting involved in writing this grant proposal, which I mentioned it to you before. This grant is for newborn babies. First part is to identify the technologies which will help identify the disease-causing genes. Then second part is actually applying this technology to the clinical setup. And the third part is actually the legal, social, and ethical issues.
Yeah.
Because even if sharing this knowledge, you know, we will, I'm hoping, you know, at least I'm very positive that by looking at somebody's gene, you'll be able to figure it out whether this person is going to be genius, whether this person is going to have psychiatric disorder, whether, you know, what all other aspect of the human personalities or diseases can be really identified this. But then how do we use that knowledge is very important. I'm hoping, because I'm a type 2 diabetes, so if I knew soon enough, I would have really got my act together and changed my lifestyle, you know. So once you get older, I think it becomes very hard. So we can use this knowledge to change the lifestyle or actually monitor a patient when we know a particular disease is going to happen later on in the life. So there will be an early diagnosis, or also we can use it for various other things. But if somebody wants to use this to discriminate people, so again, I think NIH is very aware of this and they are already working on it now. But one day it is definitely going to happen that genome sequencing will be so cheap and so easy that it will be a routine test in clinic.
Yeah, but the ethical issues in terms of eugenics is something that I think is really worrisome a little bit.
Yes, you are absolutely right. It's real worrisome. This is one of the reasons I haven't done my exome yet, you know.
So that brings up another point, which is that there are these companies out there that say that they can, you know, screen your genes, so to speak, right, for various things. What do you think about that? And is that something that a patient should be considering at this point in time?
Well, if there is, I think if the person is mature enough to take whatever knowledge is revealed, I think they should go for it. But then again, just by knowing that I'm going to have this disease really doesn't help me anything, you know. What is the outcome of that? Are there any treatments available for that particular disease? Am I going to manage my disease by knowing what's going to happen? I think those are important questions to me than just knowing what is going to happen. Because if it is a genetic disorder, I can look at my family tree and pretty much I can tell my mother has rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes. So here I am, you know. So basically, there are many things you can actually figure it out by just looking at. But the important thing is for something like cancer, it's very important, you know, if we can screen. But then again, which part of the body you're going to screen? Because as I mentioned initially, cancer is specific to a particular tissue. So you can't just take the blood and do the test and figure out whether you're going to have cancer. So that may be very helpful for inherited disorders. But for something like somatic disorder like cancer, I think early diagnosis is definitely going to be a key. So maybe there will be some other markers we'll come up with in blood, which can be really used for early diagnosis.
And then the other thing that you had mentioned too was that there is the interaction between genetics and genomics as well as the environment. And so how are we learning more about those interactions?
Well, I think in case of cancer, we already know there are so many carcinogens out there, you know. If you obviously a smoker, you know that your chances of getting lung cancer or other type of cancer increases significantly. So we can always adjust our lifestyle based on what is already known.
Dr. Srikant Main is Senior Research Scientist in Genetics, Senior Deputy Director of the MBB Keck Biotech Services, and Director of the Microarray Resource at the Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WN.